So I am so honored tonight to introduce two incredible speakers that I have been speaking to almost daily, if not daily, recently since the announcement of the female athlete lawsuit against the NCAA. Bill Bock is a sports attorney. He was the general counsel for USADA, the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, for many years. He was also the lead attorney in the Lance Armstrong investigation. He will share a lot more about his experience with us when he jumps on screen. Rekha George is a Virginia Tech former swimmer and now working actually for the swim team at the school still. She's an Olympian and a former ACC champion. So I'd love for Bill and Rekha to jump on and let's get started.
Hello, everyone.
Hi. Can you figure it out, Bill?
There we go. I was having trouble getting the volume up. Sorry.
No problem. So, Rekha, I just want to start with you. Can you share with the attendees just a little bit about your start in swimming, where you're from, tell us about your experience growing up as a swimmer.
Yeah, of course. Hi, everyone. I'm from Hungary originally. That's where I started to swim when I was 8 years old. And it's a little bit longer story how I started swimming like competitively. But I guess I just stick with the sport, especially after I had really good results. And I just fall in love with the sport and my teammates and my coaches. And growing up as a swimmer, like I had my up and downs all the time, but I always had a goal. My goal was to qualify to the Olympic Games on one day. And, in 2016, I was able to qualify to the Rio Olympic Games. I competed on 200 backstroke there. And then after that, I decided that I will take a scholarship at Virginia Tech in the US. And that's how I moved here to America in 2017, January. I was part of the team at Virginia Tech until 2022. And after graduation, I worked as an ABA therapist for a year. And then last September, I started to work for the Virginia Tech Swim and Dive team as the director of operations.
Amazing. Bill, so how about you? I know it's going to be hard to condense the many years that you've been a successful attorney, but tell us kind of your resume as a sports attorney.
Thank you so much, Marcy. First, I want to just thank you for the opportunity to be here with everybody that's a supporter of ICONS. And I just want to say that everything that this organization, Marcy, you and Kim and Rekha got it started in 2022 in Atlanta by protesting the NCAA. And just it's the work of this organization and a lot of other affiliated people that has gotten us to the point where we can even think about bringing a lawsuit. So it's an honor to be with you. For over 20 years, my professional career in law has been focused largely on a level playing field and trying to protect fairness and competition and safety for athletes. Over 20 years was with the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, as Marcia said, and about 14 as general counsel. And we had a lot of cases that involve cheating. And so I got familiar with how that happens. And of course, testosterone is one of the agents of choice for use of performance-enhancing drugs by cheating athletes. But of course, testosterone also creates enormous performance advantages for males who retain those advantages regardless of what they may attempt to do physically or through drugs, and they make and those advantages make it always unfair for a male to compete in the female category, and that's very evident. So I had other opportunities in addition to working for USADA to be in a sport integrity role for World Aquatics. It was then FINA. I was an arbitrator in their cases, their sport integrity cases. And I also served for 7.5 years on the NCAA Division I Committee on Infractions. So I got a little bit of an opportunity to see inside the NCAA. And probably should have done it earlier, but earlier this year, I did resign from that position, really in protest over the fact that, you know, they've lost their way. The number one goal of a sport organization needs to be competitive fairness and the health and safety of athletes. And their policy related to males competing in the female category achieves neither of those objectives. So I'm really thankful to have the opportunity to support the courageous 16 whistleblowers in this case and to be with you today, Marshy.
Thank you so much for that, Bill. So it's one thing for you and I to talk about it, but Reka, you have experienced it firsthand. And so could you tell us about your college career, and then walk us through the events that unfolded in 2022 at the NCAA National Championship.
Yeah, of course. So as I said earlier, I moved here in 2017, January. That was my first season with the Hokies, and I won the ACC on forehand in that year, and then the following year as well. So I'm a 2 times ACC champion, multiple times ACC medalist. I'm also 2 times All-American in the 4IM and honorable mention All-American in the 500 free and with the relays as well through my college career. But yeah, like in my senior year in 2022, you know, that was my last college competition and I was ready to go and do my best there. And even like going into the competition, I knew that Leah Thomas is going to be one of the swimmers who is going to be my rival, I guess. And knowing it as a fact, I didn't really know what it means exactly before we go to the championships. And, you know, like when we had the prelims and I saw him swimming in the 500 free, and just winning by a lot in the last heat. I watched it from the pool deck, and right after his heat, they showed the scoreboard that who made it back to the A final, the top 8, and the B final, top 16. And my name was on the 17th place, which means that I was the first alternate swimmer who didn't make it back. And it was just an emotional roller coaster, like all the feelings, like all the works I put into this and the feelings that I don't have a second chance to show what I'm capable of. It was just shocking. And, you know, like I was so emotional, I started crying, and I just wanted to express my feelings because I felt that I was cheated out from the final. It was taken away from me by a male. And it was the NCAA's fault. So I decided to write a letter to the NCAA. I gave it to them on the last day of finals in 2022. And, you know, like 2 years later, we are here and I still didn't have a word from any of them. They didn't say anything. And it just upsetting because, you know, like, many years ago, there were people who fight for our rights and fairness in sports as women. And now we are here, we go again and have to do the same thing for the current athletes and the future of female athletes in sports. And I think it just really sad that it came to the point that we have to go through this again.
So every time I hear it, it's just unbelievable. For those of you who may not know, the reason I'm sitting in this chair today is because after watching what happened to Reka on TV and learning of it in the news, my teammates at the University of Arizona asked if I would help write a collaborative letter on behalf of our alumni from our team. And so we did that, we made it public. And in doing so, I got thrust into this issue myself. And that is when I first connected with Reka. I think it was just a couple weeks after the meet that I met Riley and Reka at the time. And I just wanted to know, because, you know, our team, as far as I know, was the only alumni to write a letter after the meet happened. You were the only athlete to publish a public letter to the NCAA. Riley was the other athlete who spoke out publicly, but there were so many there at the time. What gave you the confidence to be able to write the letter and to release it at the time?
First of all, like, I really do believe that this is the right thing to do. Like, I do believe that we have to speak up, we have to bring up this issue, because it's becoming a bigger issue than it was a couple of years ago, and just fight for our rights and fight for our equal opportunity in sports against males. I think this is the right thing to do. So that was one of the main points why I wrote that letter. And the other things that I got support from my coaches, I got support from the school, obviously my family and my friends were behind me. And they supported me through the whole process why I wrote the letter and sent it to the NCAA. And obviously, like, you haven't seen me in the past 2 years to speak up about it. But as you know, Marshy, I worked in the background and I tried to help as much as I can without being in the public. And it's mostly because, as you said, I was the first athlete who spoke up about this issue, and I was the one who got all the hate from the people, and I just felt so alone in this whole process. But now we are here 2 years later, and I'm so thankful for BL to be here and represent us, for you to support us as well, and all the other plaintiffs who are working in the background, even with their name or without their name. And I don't feel alone anymore. I feel supported. I feel that I have people beside me, and these people are fighting for the same thing that I do. And I think it's important that we are here today and try to do this on the right way.
Reka, for all of you who aren't aware, she absolutely has been a crucial person behind the scenes over the last couple of years. We've kept in close contact, and so she's been so helpful. But obviously, this is another huge step. And one of the common threads between all the plaintiffs who have added on, for the most part, is that support, the team support, coach support, family support, that, you know, nobody can do this alone. And to take such a bold step in filing a lawsuit against someone as Goliath as the NCAA, it takes a lot of guts. And that is one of the common threads that I've found between meeting and getting to know all the plaintiffs on the case. So, Bill, I'm going to jump back to you now that we're talking about the legal fight. Can you just lay out the lawsuits and what these amazing women are asking for and what you hope to accomplish?
Sure. So first of all, the claims that are being made are Title IX violations, statute that applies to entities that receive federal funds and requires them to treat women equally and provide them with equal opportunity. And so our claims are under Title IX. They're also under the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, because one of the things that, you know, I didn't really even realize until getting into this lawsuit and talking with Reka and others that participated in the championships, was that a 20 two-year-old biological, 6'4" biological male, shared the locker room with all these women because of the decision made by the NCAA to change the locker rooms to unisex and not provide a safe space for women, which is unconscionable, obviously. And so we've made claims for damages for those that were kind of subjected to their loss of bodily privacy under the 14th Amendment. So we have another group of plaintiffs. Six of the plaintiffs participated in the 2022 Women's Swimming and Diving Championships, Division I. The second group of 10 plaintiffs are current athletes. And what we're asking the court to do for those current athletes is to invalidate the gender participation policies of the NCAA nationwide so that women don't any longer have to face male competitors in college sports.
So I guess this is a question for both of you, really, but I'll start with Reka. Why now? Why is this important for you to be a part of now?
You know, like in the past 2 years, we tried to make changes. Even that I wasn't in public, like I worked with you, I worked with other people, and we tried to make changes. It did not happen. Now that 2 years later, we are here without any rules changed. If we don't make a stand up right now, it's going to be gone and we won't be able to do anything about it in the future. So when Marshy reached out to me a couple of weeks ago that there's this lawsuit and we will sue the NCAA and try to change their policy, I have decided that, okay, this is the time we have to go for it. This is the time I have to stand up and talk about the right thing to do and try to make people see why we are doing this and why it's important. So that was the main point for me. And, you know, like fighting for fairness, equal opportunity and safety for women, that's really important because I have been there, I have been through it, and I don't want anyone to see to go through it in the future because it's not right, it's not a good feeling, and nobody deserves that.
I don't know if you can say it better than that, Bill, but do you want to try?
I absolutely can't. But one of the things that we were talking about earlier was this kind of conspiracy of silence that has kind of been thrown up, and it's really been reinforced by the NCAA and their policies, where they attempt to require athletes to not talk about what's happening in the locker rooms, not talk about the policies, and accuse people of transphobic behavior if they do that. And it's very similar to what we've seen in anti-doping, where there was a culture of silence that was pushed by the people that were engaging in the wrongful conduct. And so it's extremely important to stand up to because that gives a lot of other athletes courage, and other people are coming forward now because of what Reka's doing. So I did want to make that comment. The other thing I'd like to maybe just provide a few legal reasons for why it's the right time. So first of all, women's sport really has a sword of Damocles hanging over its head right now. And that's because of the Biden administration's education department regulations that they have already announced that they want to implement. They've now said that they're waiting till the end of the year after the election so that it doesn't become an issue in the presidential election. But we need to do as much as we can right now before those regulations change. And we need courts to look at Title IX and really what the NCAA has done is exactly what the Department of Education is attempting to do, which is to provide a pathway for men to participate in women's sports and take women's opportunities. So it's a really important time. this particular case is extraordinarily well positioned to bring these issues forward for a variety of reasons, but one of which is where it was brought. The case law under Title IX is a little bit muddled. Some of the activist groups have done a very good job of confusing the issues and suggesting that men and women are simply testosterone levels. And if you can reduce a man's testosterone level, presto, he becomes a woman. Obviously not true, but that idea has gotten a foothold, unfortunately, in some courts. But it hasn't in the 11th Circuit. And the 11th Circuit in 2022, after Leah Thomas competed in Georgia, made a decision called, in a case called the Adams case, where they said that gender identity and biological sex are not the same thing. And Title IX only speaks of biological sex. So we brought this case in part because the law is very good in Georgia for this sort of claim. And the federal courts there, if they follow that precedent, have a real reason to hold the NCAA to account. What the NCAA has been doing for the last 10 years is simply providing a fig leaf and providing cover to colleges and universities to violate Title IX and take away equal opportunities for women. Their defense, they have no defense because the conduct, these rules, they violate the law, but they simply blame the NCAA and say the NCAA is not covered by Title IX. We also think that's untrue, but this case has the potential to really have an impact nationwide. And there's very good case law in the jurisdiction where we brought it. So that makes us very encouraged about what could happen in this case.
Amazing. Bill, you mentioned this conspiracy of silence. I know that a lot of people want to know, Reka, what has been the response? It's been a little over 2 weeks. Could you talk about what is the response you're getting from friends, family, and the general public on your involvement in the lawsuit in general?
Yeah, I mean, in the past 2 weeks, they're phenomenal, to be honest. Like, all the responses from public, from family, from some of the coaches, even in NCAA, all positive. And, you know, like, I think we expected to have positive feedback, but maybe not this many. Like, especially like my experience 2 years ago was a totally different experience. More like the negative side was louder than the positive. And I think now it's the totally the opposite. It's more positive people, very few negative people. So I can only say good things about it. And I'm really happy.
Amazing. So Bill, she talked about the difference between 2 years ago. Could you give some insight on how the landscape has changed over the last 2 years that makes the outcome promising for us?
I think, do you mean in the way the public views this issue?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's because of the work of ICONS. It's because what, you know, Reka started, that these issues are so much more in the forefront of the public mind, and people are really starting to understand the impact as we see case after case. Some of these cases are hidden, and I think what we all need to do is be very vigilant, because there are not just Leah Thomas's out there. Leah Thomas was very public about the fact that they had transferred from the male team at UPenn just a year before and were swimming on the women's team. There are a lot of people right now that are males that aren't telling people, and they're competing, and that's dangerous for women. So we need to be very vigilant, and people are and help people to be aware and help to identify individuals that are taking advantage of the the conspiracy of silence, the fear and intimidation about even asking questions about whether somebody should be competing in the women's category or not. So those things are happening. And I think, but as people stand up and see what's happening, one of the things that I think this case is so important is for people to see what happened in the locker rooms. I don't think that's been a huge part of the discussion. It has been by those of us that amongst those of us that maybe have some concerns, but now it's entering into the public discussion as Reka and Kylie and Riley go out there and talk about what happened in Atlanta, Georgia in March of 2022, where there were women in the locker room innocently undressing in what they thought was a safe space, and a man walks in the locker room. And that was traumatizing. And I heard the stories, and it was very disturbing. And the last thing in the world, of course, an elite athlete should be having to confront and deal with right before one of the most important competitions in their life. It's totally unfair. It's totally wrong. The public knows that's wrong, but they were never told that story at the time. So it's time now for those stories to be told, time for more people to speak up, and time for all of us to continue to really uncover the massive harm that's being done through this misguided policy.
I couldn't agree more. Reka, for athletes in college now, young women like yourself, what is a piece of advice when people say, how can I help you? What can I do? What kind of things do you tell an athlete like that?
Yeah, sorry, I got emotional while Bea was speaking. But yeah, like, be brave, be bold, and just speak up for yourself and for your female athletes. And, you know, like, it's not easy. It's not easy to be public. It's not easy to put your face out there so people can judge you. But this is the best you can do. This is the best you can do for yourself and for everybody else in women's sports. And, you know, like, we are here. There are many people who you can reach out to. Please do if you need help, because we are here to help. So I think that's the best advice I can give, that we are here for everybody who needs support.
Incredible. Okay, we have a lot of questions coming through that I was hoping to run through, but I wanted to add on top of that, if anyone is interested and hasn't been on the plaintiff's website, it's takeontheNCAA.com. If you want to type that into the chat box so people have that. If you can imagine, Reka is one of 16 and now growing to a bigger number. One story of one athlete. I mean, just her story alone is so profound. It could alone overcome this whole injustice. But if you can imagine that many women and their own testimonies and stories and how this has impacted their lives, we hope to introduce every single one of them to you all. But you can start on this website, takeontheNCAA.com. There are bios up there. We're going to be posting as opinion pieces as these women share their personal stories in print. We are adding news stories and interviews that they've been giving in the media at the bottom of the page. You can read the entire 150 something page complaint that Bill has been diligently working on for many months now. And just learn more about the case itself. Also crucial in supporting these women is if you would like to contribute to their athlete legal fund on that site, you can do that as well, because this is not going to be a small battle. we know that ICONS is committed to seeing it to the end. And we, Bill is so gracious in giving us credit for changing the landscape. We absolutely cannot do this without you all. Many of you on here volunteer a lot of time to help us, have donated a lot of money to help this cause. Please reach out to friends, share the website as well. But enough about that. Let's get to some of the questions. So let me peek through here. So I think we just answered this, John, but what are examples of important things we supporters can do to assist with winning the lawsuit? So my suggestion, I think Rekha touched on this and Bill also, is please talk about this openly with your friends, your family, your teams that you're associated with. Even at work, we need to kind of lift this veil of conspiracy of silence that Bill was talking about and openly share our opinions, because the three of us have personally seen the tremendous outpouring of support and realized that, wait, everybody agrees with us. Everybody agrees women deserve fair competition. But communicating that to the masses and saying it's okay to talk about this, I think is one of the most important things that we can do. But I'll open it up to you too if you have any additional suggestions.
Marci, I think that if anybody knows of somebody, or if they are listening and their daughter has competed against a trans identifying male in collegiate sport, bring those stories forward. There may be an opportunity to bring those stories forward to the court, either as a witness or potentially even as a plaintiff, either in this case or other cases. So those are important experiences. You know, Rekha had that experience, and her story is very, very moving. And part of what we're trying to do is demonstrate to the court that women are losing equal opportunity in sport, and they need to have it. And nobody can make those points better than Rekha or others that have actually lost those opportunities. So I'd say, have anybody that has information about somebody that's competed against a male in collegiate sports under the governance of the NCAA, you know, reach out to you, Marci, and we'd like to talk with them.
Absolutely. I just put my email in the chat. Please reach out. We are constantly trying to share stories. I'll touch on a couple stories in the news actually this week of parents who have spoken out. So please reach out. And as far as this lawsuit is concerned, if it's a collegiate athlete, we want to know sooner than later. So please do that pretty urgently if you're willing. Bill, this is another question to you. Do the members of the NCAA Board of Governors truly believe that Leah Thomas and others are women? Do they really believe this is fair? Or are they under such enormous pressure from corporate sponsors that must go along? Finally, when one reads the transgender policy, it's clear that zero scientists are referenced as sources. How do they even justify this?
They really don't try to justify it. The one of the things that's been so interesting to me as I tried to figure out how these policies came into place is to see the footprint of the kind of DEI and inclusion committee on everything. And that these policies don't tend to come through sports science, don't tend to come through people that have background in sport. And so it's really a misguided gender ideology that says that we need to do this regardless. of the science, regardless of the harm to others. And so, you know, you ask if individuals on the Board of Governors know what they're doing. It's not that hard to read a dozen scientific studies that look at individuals that have transitioned their gender, have suppressed their hormones, and see that the males still retain significant performance advantages over females. And there's study after study that shows that. So they're either ignoring the science, or they're not looking for the science. That's the only explanation.
And is this the first suit of its kind? If not, how have others fared?
Yeah, in many respects, it's the first suit of its kind. This is the first suit where athletes have gone on the offensive and sued the NCAA. There have been a number of cases in which state statutes have been challenged by the ACLU and other groups trying to argue that female or woman means somebody that identifies as a woman, not necessarily based on biology. And so we've seen a lot of those cases. There have been very few where the athletes have actually initiated the action, one of which was, of course, in Connecticut. And the young ladies up there in Connecticut won a huge victory just about 3 months ago in front of the Second Circuit, and had their case reinstated. And the court there made clear that there are viable claims for those women who had to compete against boys in high school sports in Connecticut. And those claims are now gonna go to trial. So it's one of the first cases, and certainly it's the first case of its kind against the NCAA.
Do you have any suggestions on how to fight this at the state level, particularly in California, where this is becoming rampant? This would be for high school sports.
You know, I think that all high school sports, any school that receives federal funding is covered by Title IX. The problem is, and I alluded to it earlier, is that Title IX the interpretation of it can vary depending upon what part of the country that you're in. And different circuits have a different view of that aspect of federal law. And that question of how to interpret Title IX and whether Title IX draws a dividing line between males and females based on biology, which is what we're saying in this lawsuit, hasn't reached the U.S. Supreme Court. So there's going to need to be continued legal activity until the court sees that this is an issue that's arising around the country, and ultimately addresses it and decides it once and for all, or Congress makes a change as well. So, you know, there are two principal ways to address this issue. One's through the courts, and the other is through getting individuals into elected office, whether that be on local school boards, any positions that may influence who's on the high school athletic associations, or, you know, trying to influence the Department of Education through whichever administration's in office, and through Congress. These are legal questions. They're either going to be decided by the legislators, or they're going to be decided in the courts.
That's a good segue to this next question. Is Congress involved with voting on Title IX changes, or can the president do it without any other objections?
Well, I mean, if you believe in a system where the laws are written by the legislators, and you have to follow the laws that the legislators write, then it should not be that the president can reinterpret the law. or that an agency or department of government can reinterpret what has been passed. Now, it's very, very clear if you look at the legislative history, if you look at kind of the couple of years after Title IX, that there were agency regulations that were passed related to sport in Title IX, and Congress actually reviewed those. And so you can kind of look at that history and see that it clearly Title IX was intended to provide opportunities for biological females to try to equalize those opportunities in comparison to males. There's been an effort over a very diligent, well-financed effort over the last 15 years to completely change that history and reinterpret it and use court cases that are just not decided under Title IX to try to justify massive changes to the interpretation of the law. So, you know, that's kind of the fight that we're in. And unfortunately, the NCAA has chosen to be on the side of massive reinterpretation of the law and adopting the idea that women are defined just simply based on their testosterone level.
Rekha, this question is for you. Did you know in advance who you were competing against? And if so, was there talk or a way for athletes to band together in a protest and not swim? A lot of people, we get this comment about why don't the athletes step aside. Can you talk to us about the environment? How much information were you given prior? Was there discussions of this? Walk us through that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, you know your rivals. Obviously, you most likely, when you are going to the championships, you know that who are you are going to swim against. But this was just a unique situation because it never happened before. And obviously, it was in the news that Thomas is going to compete against us. So we knew it until a certain degree, but nobody talked about it. You know, like, our coaches didn't really share information. I don't think so. They knew many informations, how it's going to happen when we go into the championships. So it was just like an uncertainty that we didn't really know what to expect. We didn't know how it's going to look like. We didn't even know that we will have to change in the same locker room with Thomas until we got to the competition. Like, the day before the championship started, that's when our coaches came up to us, to my team, and told that, look, Thomas is going to be in the same locker than you. There's no other options. You will have to share the locker room with him. So, yes, I knew that he's going to be there, or who else is going to compete against me. But the other hand, I didn't know how it's going to look like. So because of that, I didn't know the details. The athletes didn't talk about it. We didn't know what to do. And most of us was told that we have to be silent. We couldn't talk about it. Sorry, Bill.
No, I want you to keep going, please.
So like, we didn't talk about it because we were told not to. So it would have been really hard to get a group together and not to step up to the blocks and compete. But also, you know, it's about you, but it's about your team as well. And you fight for your team, not just for you. You have your teammates, you have to get points. And obviously, like, this is what you work for every single day when you go to the practice, and you don't want to miss that chance to compete. So it would be really hard to step down and protest against it.
That's extremely well said. And I apologize for interrupting. What I wanted to emphasize what Rekha said, because it's so important to understand that athletes are vulnerable in that situation. They're vulnerable throughout the season because they give so much and they have these dreams of competing and achieving excellence. And those dreams are pretty exclusionary of doing a lot of things that the rest of us get to do every day. They don't have time to sit around and be thinking about how they can organize a protest so that the competition can be fair. That's not their job. And Cynthia Millen put it up in the chat. It's the official's job. And they just they fell down on the job. They didn't protect these young ladies. The NCAA did not protect these young ladies. It's shameful, but it's the responsibility of sport administrators to protect, because athletes are vulnerable. And it's the same way in doping. You can't just expect other people athletes to bring these things forward. You have to have a concern about the athletes that goes far beyond what the NCAA is demonstrating on this issue. Somebody else put up in the chat that, you know, Charlie Baker was asked what sort of research, what sort of studies have been done to show the impact on young women of competing against males. And the testimony of the Congress was none. The NCAA has done nothing. They've completely failed in their responsibilities to athletes. So I just kind of wanted to emphasize how important what Rekha said is in understanding that context, that the NCAA is taking advantage of the vulnerability of athletes. They knew there wasn't going to be a protest from the athletes at the 2022 National Championships. They knew they could change the locker rooms to unisex because athletes would never speak up. Their coaches wouldn't let them because they would tell them, you got to focus on competing and trying to win. You can't be distracted. That's an athlete can never be in a position to protect themselves. So responsible individuals that are involved in sport need to take on that role, and which is why I'd say, you know, the NCAA has abdicated its first responsibility as a sport governing body. And if they aren't willing to assume that responsibility, Congress shouldn't allow them to continue to be a governing body in collegiate sport.
But that's a wonderful point, Bill. And also, I'm not sure if you mentioned this, but if Rekha had sat out, she wouldn't be on this call right now. If she had protested, she would not be able to be in this lawsuit to actually show the real damage of missing the finals by one spot. So this is a kind of a touchy subject. As icons, we do not advocate for protesting or boycotting. We do support athletes who want to do that, because some do. Some want to take a stand and sit out, and we hope that they do it as publicly as possible. But we do not advocate for that for these reasons. It's very complex, so it's an individual decision, and we will support the athlete however they want to move forward. So we're running up on time. I think we could talk for hours on this, but I wanted to give you both the floor. If there's anything that we're missing or you'd like to add, please share with the group.
You go, Rekha.
I just want to say thank you for everybody to being here and supporting us, because it's great to know that we have people who feel the same way. And I guess I can say that we are representing those people who don't have a voice, or you don't have, like, they don't have a voice yet. So yeah, it's great. And thank you for everybody to being here.
And I think what I would say is the 16 plaintiffs in this case are whistleblowers, they're heroes. And, you know, let's treat them like that right at the beginning of the case and all through. And really, win or lose, whether we win the case or not, these young ladies are standing up for, you know, truth, for scientific truth, for they're standing up for other women in their sports. And so I'm just really proud of Rekha, really proud of you, Rekha. She's very humble. She didn't mention she's an Olympian, I don't think. Maybe that came out, but she is. And so, you know, send her emails and text messages. And the rest of the plaintiffs too, these young ladies really do need to be encouraged, because it's not all going to be easy. And some of them are going to be on campuses. A lot of them, we've heard the stories, some of the, Reka's on a college campus while she's getting support from a lot of people. It's not 100%, I'm sure. And there are a lot of other plaintiffs that could just use everybody's support. So, just really lift these young ladies up and support them.
I couldn't agree more. Well, thank you both so much for being here. We hope to get to know both of you better and hear updates throughout the case, absolutely. And we'll keep everybody posted as best we can. But the best landing page to do that, to keep up to date and share with friends, is takeonthencaa.com. So thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Marcy.